Case number 12-5267, Vernon McKinley, Appellant v. Federal Housing Finance Agency. Mr. Makesha for the appellant, Mr. Frank for the appellee.
Mr. Makesha.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Michael Makesha on behalf of Appellant Vernon McKinley. Mr. McKinley is the quintessential average person who sought and continues to seek information from the government. In this case, Mr. McKinley sought the specific reasons why FHFA chose to place Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac into conservatorship instead of receivership. Mr. McKinley sent a FOIA request. Within the 20 days allotted by the law, the government did not respond. Mr. McKinley had to file a complaint in the district court to have access to these records.
Let's see, the government actually asked for clarification, did it not, of the scope of his request? So there was a response.
There was a response, yes,
and
Your Honor.
What did your client do in response to that request?
I believe Mr. McKinley narrowed the response and clarified for the government what records he was seeking.
And what was the date of that?
I do not have that date off the top of my head, Your Honor.
Well, do you know approximately how much time expired between your client's response and the filing of his complaint?
I do not know off the top of my head, Your Honor, but
approximately. We can check the time, but the dates, but I thought you might know. In other words, you file a request, the government asks for some clarification, you provide clarification, and then what?
Mr. McKinley awaited the period, the 20 days that is required for the government to respond by law, and then filed suit. During that time period,
he filed suit immediately after the 20 days expired from the date he filed his original FOIA request?
No, Your Honor. Mr. McKinley waited for the period to toll. It was approximately 3 days between the time the government asked for clarification and the time he provided a response.
So what is that time period?
That time period was 3 days in which the clock did not run.
And so how much time was left?
At that point, Your Honor? I believe Mr. McKinley, it was about a month later after he...
But do you understand why I'm focusing on this time consideration?
I am not, Your Honor.
You emphasize strongly that your client is just like Mr. Davey in the Davey case. All right? But in the Davey case, it's a situation where the government sort of dug in its heels. Indeed, the concurring opinion refers specifically to that. So I just want to be clear what was going on here, because the government did not ignore the request, but asked for clarification. It received it, and I'm still trying to figure out how much time the government had to respond to that clarification.
Sure, Your Honor. Mr. McKinley filed on a joint appendix, page 6, Mr. McKinley sent his original FOIA request on May 23rd. On May 26th, FHFA acknowledged receiving the request. At that point, a response was due. A determination of whether or not records would be produced was due by June 22nd, 2010. 2 days before that, on June 20th, FHFA sought clarification. Mr. McKinley responded immediately on June 23rd.
And he filed his complaint when?
July 12th.
All right, so what is that?
Approximately 2 weeks after the period required by law had expired.
All right. So, do you characterize 2 weeks as digging in?
I do not, Your Honor.
Want to be clear about that.
In our briefing, at no point do we say that the government digged in and was trying to avoid responding. However, what our position is and what the position of the law is and the law of this circuit is that the government has 20 days to respond. After those 20 days, if a response has not been provided, as a response being a determination whether or not records would be produced and then the subsequent production of those records.
Yeah. My question is not intended to suggest you, your client, or you on behalf of your client, couldn't file a complaint because the time had expired. I'm just trying to understand the factual circumstances that are relevant to consideration of the Cotton factors. And you say your client is just like Davey. So I'm trying to understand why you think that is so.
Our client, Mr. McKinley, is just like Davey because Mr. McKinley has been seeking these records. He sought these records as well as various other records over the past 4 or 5 years to educate the public, inform the public on what the government is up to.
All of his other requests, has he immediately filed suit as soon as the first period has expired?
No, Your Honor. Mr. McKinley has waited.
So we're just dealing with this request and this case.
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right. So we don't have any digging in by the government. All right. The government responded when you filed your complaint saying it had identified 3 documents, but it asserted privileges to which it's entitled to assert under the statute.
Yes, Your Honor. We then proceeded to summary judgment briefing on 2 of the documents that were being withheld in their entirety pursuant to deliberative process and attorney work product.
So you didn't contest 1 at all?
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right.
We looked at the information provided by the government in support of their withholding of the records, and we determined that 2 of those records we believe were being improperly withheld.
So the district court said he was going to hold the motions for summary judgment in abeyance until there was an in-camera inspection.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Correct. So then the judge conducted an in-camera inspection, right? Found the work product privilege was inapplicable as to 2 of the documents.
That is correct, Your Honor.
But that the deliberative process privilege applied nonetheless?
That is correct. The district court ordered the government to review the records, segregate out the information that was being improperly withheld, and produce those records to Mr. McKinley. Mr. McKinley received court-ordered relief.
And so on what date did the government give your client these 2 documents?
It was in September. They were produced by the date certain required by the district court. The district court's opinion was in August. The district court gave the government a couple weeks to review the records, segregate out the information, and produce it to Mr. McKinley. The government proceeded to do that.
All right. So clearly no digging in, as you can see. And then the court granted summary judgment to the government, and then you moved for fees.
Yes, Your Honor.
So do you read the district court's decision to assume that your client is eligible for fees?
No, Your Honor. The district court, at best I can tell, did not reach that decision. The district court almost skipped over that prong, that requirement by the law.
Well, I mean, what I'm getting at, there was no point in getting to the second prong unless she assumed eligibility. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right.
Under the plain language of the statute.
So you want us to tell the district court to go back and not assume eligibility, but make a determination?
Yes, Your Honor. The district court should make a determination that Mr. McKinley is eligible for attorney's fees because he received court order relief.
Why does it matter? So assume the district court were correct. I appreciate you're challenging that. The district court were correct that he's not entitled. It wouldn't matter whether he's eligible, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So you weren't hurt. The district court said the court has serious doubts as to whether this amounts to substantially prevailing. In any event, even if the plaintiff were eligible, he's not entitled. So I don't see how you're hurt by the district court not determining one way or the other whether you're eligible. How are you hurt? If the court had held you were not eligible, you wouldn't be hurt. But how are you hurt by the eligibility determination?
We're hurt by both prongs, essentially, Your Honor.
I understand how you're hurt by the second. I don't understand how you're hurt by the first.
I guess we're hurt, but my client is hurt by the first because arguably the court didn't reach the second. Whether or not, in her opinion, it seems to suggest that she did go through the analysis, but whether or not that analysis was even proper.
All right, well, we're going to look at the analysis of the second, but I don't understand why the first bothers you one whit, actually. I mean, basically, she assumed, at the worst, she said, I don't think you're right, but I'm going to assume it and move on.
It's contrary to the statute, the plain language of the statute.
What is?
Her
assuming isn't contrary.
Her the fact that she did not make a decision.
But it doesn't hurt you that she doesn't make a decision, does it? Can I ask you another question since we're pretty much out of time?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you have in front of you the actual document that we're talking about? It's Appendix A to the government's request for summary judgment.
I do, Your Honor.
Can you help me with, I'm just trying to figure out which things you're relying on for being important information in the public interest that you obtained. So if I look on the first page, it's the one that says confidential draft.
Yes, Your Honor.
I take it the consent order is a receivership, is that right?
Yes, it is, Your
Honor.
Funny
way to describe the receivership, but I guess that is the way they do it. Okay. So the only thing on that page are the words public perception in the lower left corner. Is that right? Or is there something else on that page?
On the first page, Your Honor?
On the page it says confidential draft, consent order and conservatorship features, strength and weaknesses. It's page 2 of 14. In my ECF printout, it's page 2 of 14.
Okay. I may have a different version.
Well, you have a version that has the word public perception somewhere because you quoted it in your brief,
yes,
right?
Your Honor.
All right. So that one has at the top consent order and conservatorship features, strengths, and weaknesses, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the lower left corner, it's got the words public perception, right?
Yes.
Those are the only words you're calling to our attention on that page, right?
On that page, that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And it doesn't say what they did about that. It just says that's one of the topics. It's just under a list of topics.
That right? is correct, Your Honor.
All right. Now, the next page of my draft, anyway, which is page 3 after page 2, so it seems like it's in order, it has in the center, it says, unsafe or unsound practices, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And it says labor intensive.
That is correct.
Those are the only words on those pages, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And these are, I take it, this would be receivership features, right? That's the idea. The title is consent order, which you've said is receivership, and conservatorship features, strengths and weaknesses. So this would be some feature of a receivership. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. It was this document's a chart comparing and contrasting the two options the government had at that time.
All right. Now, is there any other word?
Page two is
the second.
Do you agree that the court needed these documents in order to evaluate your challenge?
I do, Your Honor. And
is there any reason you didn't provide them?
I apologize, but as I was reviewing what was in the joint appendix yesterday, I realized the documents had not made its way into the record.
Well, the government noted that in its brief. And in your reply brief, you still didn't provide them.
I apologize, Your Honor.
All right.
Just to continue, are there any other words that you want to call our attention to? I didn't see anything else in the brief. The only things I saw were the words public perception, unsafe or unsound practices, and labor intensive. Is that right? Those are the only words?
Those are the words we pointed to in our brief, Your Honor. The idea, the reason we are here is because Mr. McKinley sought these records. This is a newly released information to the public.
I understand, but first I need to figure out what words I should be looking at. So of the entire rest of the unredacted document, which runs 14 pages, there are no other words that you're drawing to our attention, right?
Well, let me ask you, are drawing our attention to the phrase grounds for issuance, aren't you?
I'm drawing your attention to the entire record, to the entire document that was produced. I understand that there's still a lot of redactions made still on this document. However, this newly discovered, this newly produced record likely adds to the fund of information that is available on the decision and made by FHFA.
Before I get to the argument, I just need to know the fact questions.
So that's correct.
The only facts that you drew our attention to was public perception, unsafer, unsound practice, and labor intensive. The words ground for issuance is one of the topics. That's the difference between the grounds for issuance of a receivership and the grounds for conservatorship, I take it, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's in every case. Those are what's required for issuance. They have different grounds, and they're looking at since we don't know, since there's nothing in the column conservatorship.
There are 12 different reasons under the federal statute in which a decision could be made to place one of these entities into conservatorship or receivership. Prior to the release of this document, the government had not identified under which of those 12 statutory reasons.
Well, how do you know all the other ones aren't listed there but are redacted?
Under grounds for issuance, there is, if I'm not mistaken, there are no other redactions in that box.
I see. Right, let me ask one other question. You mentioned something about the date of the document coming 3 weeks before or something like that. So in your brief, you said that was something else you learned?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where is that shown on this page? How do you know what the date of the document is?
I believe the date of the document was identified on the Vaughn Index that was provided with summary judgment briefing.
So that was voluntarily provided?
It was provided during summary judgment briefing. It was not voluntarily provided until after Mr. McKinley sued FHFA and summary judgment briefing went forward.
But that wasn't part of the order of the court to redact. To segregate, that was part of the litigation, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
In Davey, you say that for the purpose of this question, I want you to assume that you're correct about the second and third factors. And you said that Davey is contradictory because in that course that we said the district court abused its discretion in determining that the second and third factors weighed against Davey, right?
Yes.
And you put yourself in the same category as Davey with respect to the second and third category. At least, right? Your view is you're as good as Davey, so it was inconsistent with Davey for the district court.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. But the district court did not weigh the factors against you, as the district court did in Davey, right?
The district court essentially didn't weigh the factors in Mr. McKinley's favor or the government's favor.
So it's not inconsistent with Davey, which merely said it shouldn't be weighed against Davey. In this case, the district court simply says neither strongly support nor counsel against it. In fact, by the use of the word strongly, it suggests maybe it does support an award.
We believe under Davey, Davey would strongly support the law that came about because of Davey would strongly support Mr. McKinley's case.
What do you mean, what law came about because of Davey?
Mr. McKinley being an academic, someone seeking information for the public sphere, we believe that he had no commercial interest, private incentive.
I understand, but that all Davey says, you shouldn't weigh these things against him. It doesn't say that this is strongly, that you should have weighed them strongly in his favor. The court doesn't instruct the district court to go back and weigh it strongly in his favor, does it?
Not specifically, Your Honor.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions? Okay.
And so I just want to be very clear what you did with these documents. The documents to which the Chief Judge Garland was referring you, if I were to go on the web in that scribe.com site, that's exactly what I would see?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, if you were to Google FHFA, conservatorship, and probably one other, I haven't done an actual search recently for it, that document would pop up. You wouldn't actually need to go to Scribd, then search under Mr. McKinley's name.
So how would I know whether or not the redactions extended to the other grounds that the statute lists?
Within the box that language, that text is in, there isn't another redaction and there isn't more room for additional reasons to be labeled out.
Let me just ask you, counsel. Normally in these redacted cases, we see a document with blacked out portions that are redacted. And the version that is referred to in your reply brief and in the government's brief of the documents doesn't have any blacked out.
Yes, Your Honor. The government chose in this instance to maybe put a piece of redaction tape over it.
That's what it looks like, right?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, Mr. McKinley isn't sure of exactly how the government redacted the material. But
now, what I'm getting at is, I'm not sure I understand. This is labeled a confidential draft. How do you know that any tape was put over these documents is what I'm trying to get at.
On where there's what it appears from the face of the document is every instance in which a redaction was made, there is a B5 indication, meaning that it was being withheld pursuant to Exemption 5.
But what I'm trying to get at is it's a confidential draft, and some things, like the column about acceptance, is left blank. So I'm just trying to wonder if I, as a member of the public, go to this website and I see these documents, can I rely on them, is what I'm trying to get at?
Yes, Your Honor. The material received by Mr. McKinley was placed on the website as they were received by the government. We believe the face of the document is clear that some material has been produced that was originally improperly withheld. The material that is being withheld is now clear that material is being withheld.
But the question is it of any use to the public? If it's a draft, and it's an incomplete draft,
the document
then
is
how could a member of the public, or even your client, as a member of the public, rely on this as telling the public that these are the factors the government relied on? That's all I want to understand. In other words, the government could have searched its records and found out, there was an earlier draft.
Yes, Your Honor.
And it doesn't say anything, but that we can't segregate out. But on the other hand, the final draft, may not look like this.
Your Honor, Mr. McKinley asked for all records related to the decision.
What I'm trying to understand, so I understand the rule you're asking for, is that if the government has a file drawer of documents and it asserts privileges and it's told to segregate and it finds an early draft, this is my hypothetical, and it releases it, what does it tell the public? That at the early stages of the agency's consideration of this issue, here's what a draft said?
That's not what happened in this case, Your Honor.
I'm asking for the public benefit, that factor.
The public benefit factor, yes, Your Honor, it would be significant. The government, it is more information that has been provided to the public to make vital decisions, in this instance, whether or not the public agrees or disagrees with the actions taken by FHFA to place these two entities into a conservatorship instead of receivership.
So it doesn't matter. I just want to understand the rule here. It doesn't matter if this is just an early draft that the government subsequently, hypothetically, abandoned.
We believe that every record released by the government would shed light on the decisions it makes, and the public has a right to know when certain exemptions are not proper. In this case, the
Okay.
The district court decided.
So it doesn't matter. That's the point.
It's additional.
Just, we have some information out of a government file.
Under the case law talks about likely to add information to the public, into this public sphere. In this instance, in your hypothetical, that record would add information to the public, into the public.
And the district court was trying to focus on what benefit it would provide. That's all I'm getting at, under the Cotton factor.
Yes, Your Honor, but the public benefit is the likeliness of adding additional information into the public.
So is it your position then that the district court, and I'll find the actual language, when the district court says, that the plaintiff has failed to explain how the minimal information derived assists the decision-making of the public in any meaningful way. Are you arguing that that is an incorrect standard, or that you had no burden, or that the district court's subsequent statement where it says the court is not persuaded that the scant material made publicly available pursuant to a multi-year FOIA litigation yielded any discernible public benefit? Are you saying that that's a clearly erroneous factual finding or a legally improper standard?
It's an illegally improper standard. Under Cotton, the analysis is whether or not this information likely added to the public. It is not the role of the courts or even the government to decide what they think the public should or should not know and what the public should or should not think is important. Mm-hmm. It should be placed in the public sphere for citizens to review, to look at, and then decide for themselves whether or not this is important information that they need to help them participate in the public political process in the future. Mr. McKinley sought these records, he received these records, and then he published these records to educate the public, and it is now up to the public to decide whether or not this information is helpful to them, important to them, and whether or not they will use this information Mr. McKinley posted and made public to further educate themselves and make decisions in the future concerning a variety of factors. So,
and what is your best case other than Davey on the first factor, which is public benefit? You agree that's the first factor, right?
Yes, Your Honor. There's no case going the other way. There's no case that will say, yeah, Davey's our best case, but I believe all the cases combined in their entirety focus on the release of new information that is likely to add. Davey talks about the three factors, essentially the first three factors all talk about whether, the requester is seeking documents for public informational purposes or for commercial benefit. And we believe that, the public benefit is new information was added into the public sphere. Mr. McKinley sought these records for academic reasons, as well as to educate the public. He had no commercial motive, no private incentive. Mr. McKinley is seeking these records to put out there in the public sphere. We believe it's for those reasons that he is entitled to fees as well.
We'll hear from the government.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Steve Frank. Seated with me at council table is Leonard Scheitman. If I may just jump right into the conversation that the court has started with my colleague and go straight to the line of questioning that Judge Rogers presented, because I think that goes to the heart of the matter. I mean, why did Congress and why has this court upheld an award of fees? The court has made clear that it's not a reward for some technical win. The court has made clear that it's to prevent an agency from what the court called in LaSalle University from refusing to comply with FOIA for unreasonable obduracy. That's the phrase. And I think Judge Rogers pointed out and made it very clear that the government was by no means unreasonably obdurate in this case. We responded within a relatively short period of time. Davey is quite contrary, as Judge Garland pointed out, in a number of ways, but it's mostly contrary in this way, because in Davey, the government did not respond to plaintiff's request for over 6 years. We responded in every way. We asked for clarification. When the court told us to conduct a segregability analysis, which, by the way, the court did sua sponte, we did so promptly, and we released. We didn't claim, as we might have, that the factual material was inextricably intertwined with the deliberative process material. No. We conducted the segregability analysis, and we released what we thought was segregable, non-factual information. This is not one of those cases where the government was unreasonably obdurate, and you must give fees to discourage the government from doing that in the future. It's not a case where the government, again, FOIA talks about the government trying to wait out a plaintiff because it knows that it can afford to do so, and you must give incentives to the plaintiff to know that he will get his fees back at the end of the day. This is not that kind of case. I'd like to also turn...
Could I just understand,
yes, ma'am.
Is the government's position then that even if the information was of public benefit, and even if there was no commercial or private interest, in other words, the first three factors all weigh in favor of the plaintiff, that the fourth factor, I know you're not arguing it's determinative, but that because of what congressional intent as indicated in legislative history, that controls in effect?
No, Your Honor. We're not arguing that it's either determinative nor that it's controlling.
But if you win three out of four.
I beg your pardon?
If you win as plaintiff three out of four of the four factors, then no, don't you get...
I'd put my money on that, Your Honor, that bet any day. I think Your Honor would be correct in that case, but one factor. You consider all of the factors, and here I think what is really important, and this gets to Judge Garland's line of questioning, is that we did in fact win. The district court, Judge Rothstein, did not abuse her discretion, and that's basically what the plaintiffs are saying here. They're claiming that Judge Rothstein abused her discretion when she made the entitlement determination, and we're saying that she did not do that. And I think that that Judge Garland's colloquy with my colleague underscores that. Let's look, as Judge Garland did, at what they got. They got a piece of paper that basically lists some of the statutory factors for conservatorship or receivership. That is in sharp contrast to Davey, where this court found that it was important new information about the Kennedy assassination.
Can you comment on Judge Rogers' question about the word draft? Is this the final draft? Is this the an early draft, and there is no final draft, and that's why you didn't produce a final, or what?
My understanding from speaking with agency counsel is that this was a draft. These were like talking points, early talking points in the stage that...
Does this mean there is no final paper that compares these things?
That is my understanding.
Because if there were, you would have put it on the Vaughan Index, right?
That's correct.
So all we know is that this is some early talking points?
That's correct. We would have produced, if there had been another document, we would have produced that, but there was not. There were just these three documents. But I would like to point out...
Can you... I'm sorry, since none of this is in the appendix. How does the Vaughan Index describe this document? You have the Vaughan Index here anywhere?
I do not have it handy. I apologize for that. It's in the record, and I can make it available. But I know...
The Vaughan Index, through the benefits of electronic mail from my law clerk,
right.
The Vaughan Index states there is no final version.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Modern technology, it's amazing. And that's correct, and I think that's important, and that goes to, I'm going to come back, if I might, because we're right here, I'm going to come back to the public benefit, but I think it goes to what Judge Rogers was talking about, and where on the web can you find this. I don't know that it's dispositive or not, but it is under this SCRIBD website. I didn't find it under just a plain Google search, but if you go to this website and look up Mr. McKinley, he has posted all court documents in all of his FOIA cases. So you actually can find document 18.1, which is the document that counsel was using. But it simply says exactly what the court says. As a matter of fact, every document from this case is on there, including the notice of oral argument. But does that tell, aside from the difficulty of finding that, what does that tell, and this gets to Judge Garland's line of inquiry, what does that tell the public? How different is that from Davey?
Well, what does it tell the public?
Okay.
In the topic section where it says public perception, is the rest of that box blacked out, or was there nothing, whited out, or was there nothing else in that box?
In the topic box?
The one, yes.
Or in the other boxes?
On the topic where it says public perception in the lower left corner.
And my understanding is that's all that said,
that's
was
all it
public
says.
Perception. And I might say, Your Honor is correct, let's be clear about this. All that does is say topic. That is not listed under consent order or conservatorship. So we don't really know, because it was withheld under B5, we don't really know whether that was a factor that was taken into account. That's just a topic. So that really doesn't tell very much other than it's a topic. If you look to the next page.
Do you have the document in front of you?
Yes, sir.
So there's a line under public perception. You see that line? What causes that line? You see there's
I apologize. I do not have an unredacted version.
There's no line on yours?
There's no line. There's a little dot.
You have a... Wait. I don't have an unredacted version either. I have a redacted version.
I have the document that was filed with the court.
Yes, so do I.
Document 18-1 on the...
Right.
Okay.
That's what I have.
And I have public perception. I don't have a line.
Okay, thank you.
I can show the court. There's a little dot. But my point being, that whether there's a line or there's not a line, that's just listed as a topic. It's not listed as something that was considered in terms of whether or not she put it in a receivership or a consent. Now, turn to the next.
Part of the plaintiff's argument, it seems to me, is that he obtained some information that was not previously available. All of this action took effect within a very short period of time. He says 3 weeks. So the fact that the public now knows that whether this was the first draft, the second draft, the third draft, these were things that were going into the government's thinking about what to do during this financial crisis. And indeed, that it didn't even figure it out until very late in the game, and, you know, the allegations that are made in the brief. Why isn't the question as to how valuable this is a matter simply for the public to determine? I mean, somebody looking at it could say, this doesn't tell us anything that's useful. Somebody else could say, well, it tells us here's how the government started, and it's working in a very fast timetable.
So, yes, Your Honor. I think that the case is governed by a principle of law that was set forth in Cotton, as the court has pointed out. The plaintiff is only entitled to the public benefit factor where his or her victory is likely to add to the fund of information that citizens may use in making vital political choices. And the district court found that had not been met in this case, as we've pointed out, and I think that Your Honors have indicated, that the information was so minuscule here, so ephemeral, so preliminary. And the key point is that in agreeing that it did not meet that Cotton test, what our argument is that Judge Rothstein did not commit an abuse of discretion. All judges have to look at the material and see whether it's meets that test or not. And in looking at this bare-bones factual material, which simply said that a topic was considered, such as public perception, that really doesn't meet that. It doesn't add anything. In the second point about it being an unsafe or unsound business practice, the next page that Judge Garland was looking at, again, that is an item that is listed under grounds for issuance. It's listed under a consent order. However, as plaintiff's counsel conceded in his brief and here in oral argument, that's a factor that applies to both conservatorships and receiverships. So we don't really know whether
which factor is that?
Unsafe or unsound practices on page 7 of plaintiff's reply brief. He lists the factors. He says FHFA could have appointed a conservator or a receiver for any of the following reasons and lists unsafe or unsound condition. So the mere fact that that's listed there as a factor means nothing except that it says that's a factor under the statute. So anybody reading the statute would have as much information as there. That's not new information. That's not new information about the Kennedy assassination.
Well, he says there are a list of 7 or 9 factors, and this is the one that was selected out, and that the public wouldn't know which factor was selected out as the key factor. The other factors are not listed.
But Your Honor, that is not, I think counsel is drawing a conclusion there to say that was the final factor that was selected out.
But it is true that no other factors listed there, right?
In a preliminary draft memorandum, it's listed as one of the factors, but it, as I said, it's also one of the factors for a receivership as well. And I think it's a presumption. It certainly does not shed light to the public to say or to conclude that that was the sole factor. And in fact, if that was the sole factor, this is not the grassy knoll. I mean, the fact that the agency relied upon one of the factors in the statute in making this decision is not some top secret here.
Well, we don't need a grassy knoll on the FOIA.
That's correct.
Know. And the other thing is, I know the standard you cited appears in our case, and we cited a Fifth Circuit case for that standard about, you know, significant political decisions. But when I looked at the Fifth Circuit case, that is just stated with no citation whatsoever. The court was previously looking at the Senate report, and it quotes from the Senate report. But its statement doesn't suggest that there was anything in the legislative history talking about significant political judgments. Now, in the context that the Fifth Circuit was speaking, that could have been a relevant consideration, but I didn't understand it to be something that it has to be a significant political decision, because certainly under that ground, you know, an author isn't making a significant political decision when he or she decides that some piece of information, you know, is significant.
Well, Your Honor, I must admit I'm not familiar with the Fifth Circuit case that was cited, but I'm relying on D.C. Circuit, which repeatedly cites the Cotton standard as a standard. And I think the important part of that is the part about adding to the fund of information. And I think that the main theme the government wants to get across in this case is, I know that the court has been relatively open, liberal, if I might say, with regard to FOIA fees, and that may well be appropriate in the appropriate case, such as Davey and Edmonds and other cases. Morley, more recently, they sent back. But I think the government's point here is today, there has to be a bottom line. There has to be a de minimis kind of thing, that it has to rise above that de minimis kind of benefit. Plaintiff is really espousing a per se rule that if we get anything under any kind of an order, no matter how preliminary, no matter how disjointed, even if it's factual, even if it's not really what we were seeking in the first place, we should prevail. And not only should we prevail, but it would make a district court's decision against us on fees an abuse of discretion. And we just think that that goes too far. That's a bridge too far.
Okay. Are there further questions? Thank you. I assume there's no time left. Sorry.
Thank you.
We'll give you another minute if you like.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I apologize again for not including the two documents. Would it be helpful to the court?
Sorry, we haven't. It's not a problem. Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Your Honor. Real quick, it may say draft on it, but this is a final record. This is what was used by the government to make its decision. Mr. McKinley asked for all records. The government produced three records. Describing this one on the Vaughn Index was there wasn't another version of this. So even though it may say confidential draft on the top, this was, for all intents and purposes, a final record.
Well, we just don't know the answer to that, really, right? There might have been a final record that was destroyed. They may have a completely different process for making decisions. The answer is neither you nor we know the answer, right?
Yes, Your Honor. That is possible, but from what we know from the record and from the declarations from the Vaughn Index, Mr. McKinley believes this is a final record. Finally, I just want to clarify that Scribd, which Mr. McKinley posts all of his records on, is not just his personal website or a random website out there. Scribd is used by a lot of media organizations, a lot of nonprofits. I believe the government posts. The Justice Department may even also use Scribd to post their records.
What about the government's de minimis argument?
The government's attorney talked about Khan and likely to add to the fund of information. We believe this is information. It's new information. Therefore, it is added to the fund of information. This case falls squarely within that rule. And for that reason, we believe that entitlement fees is appropriate.
So I just need to be clear about that. I understand that on your eligibility argument, but government counsel was arguing on the entitlement prong.
So am I, Your Honor.
So you say you want nearly $16,000. If the judge had given you $100, would that be the end of the case? I just need to understand. The government is saying there is a bottom line here.
Yes, Your Honor.
And your argument is any information obtained that the plaintiff believes is indicative of why the government acted the way it did is necessarily of public benefit?
The public benefit is satisfied when the information is likely to add, and in this case did add, to the fund of information. It's when you get to the reasonableness award component that such factors should and can be taken into account.
So
however,
can I
the
just
court
be
didn't
clear?
Rules there.
There is new data, all right, but the word benefit in the first factor is just tantamount to new data?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, we'll take the matter under submission. Thank you.